I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers. We're going to discuss challenges and opportunities. My guests are Jason Kloth, President and CEO of Ascend Indiana, Gene Putnam, Executive Vice President, Chief Nursing Office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, President, University of Indianapolis. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers today on No Limits. If you want to join this important conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are a veteran of the program, Jason Kloth. He is the president and CEO of Ascend Indiana. Gene Putnam, executive vice president, chief nursing office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, president of University of Indianapolis. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk, Jason, I'll get you started. Let's talk a little bit about the scope of this challenge right now, what it is we're trying to accomplish, what mountain we're trying to climb.
Sure. So I think what we see in the nature of the labor market today is that demand is far outstripping the supply of workers with the knowledge and skill required to do the jobs, really to fill the good jobs that are out there in our economy today. So Georgetown forecast said that in the coming years, 62% of jobs in central Indiana will require at least some form of post-secondary education. That could be a certificate of value, a two-year degree, four-year degree, and beyond. But when we look at the supply of workers with that level of requisite education, it's only hovering around 42%, and we haven't seen the growth that we need to. So when we ask ourselves, well, why is this happening, we see four primary causes, each of which are complex and difficult to solve. But the first is too few students that graduate from high school go on to enroll in post-secondary education. Of those that go on to enroll, they oftentimes require remediation in basic algebra or English language arts. Oftentimes, they don't study in fields where there's tremendous demand, like in nursing, software development, and the like. Too few go on to persist and complete either within the community college or four-year system. And then finally, they have a very difficult time finding employment for a number of reasons upon completion of that degree. And so I think at Ascend, we're really focused on how do we tackle that at a systemic level. And one of the key ways that we go about doing that is partnering alongside higher education institutions like the University of Indianapolis, and with great employer partners like Community Health to address these challenges, ultimately to the benefit of those seeking employment and access to the middle class.
Gene, how is this this shortage affecting life in your world?
Well, at any given time, in our network, we have about 200 open nursing positions. These are just RNs, and we have a lot of other support systems that need to be filled, like, you know, LPNs and medical assistants and those kinds of things. So the workforce shortage for nursing is huge, and it's significant. And we're not getting always the diversity in the workforce that we'd like to see as well, so especially at the RN level. So it's significant.
Rob, I know in the world we are, and in, I don't think, given my introduction, it's going to shock anyone. I work in academia as well. We're struggling still at times to find students and all of that, even though there is clearly this demand out there. Where do you think the block in the pipeline is?
So I think over time, really the last 10 or 15 years, the value of higher education has been called into question. And the response has been to simply commodify it. So it doesn't matter how good it is. It matters only that it puts you into a job that's in mm-hmm. demand. And I think the reconnection of the pipeline that allows a university like universities mm-hmm. like ours to put together programs that feed a pipeline to a career that include things like the liberal arts and the ability to speak and read mm-hmm. and write, be logical and communicate.
And keep learning.
And keep learning and have that passion to kind of do that throughout your life. We know make for better careers, not just the instant job, but better careers, and connect a pipeline with meaningful possible employees much, much better. So that pipeline, I think, needs to be reconnected. And certainly we higher education institutions need to do a better job of defending the value that we provide through our students, whether they're in majors that aren't directly connected to the immediate job, like nursing or, in my case, history, where the job might be 20 years down the road, but there still is that connection into relevance in society.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Dave has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Certainly.
My point, and I am currently employed as a contract industrial engineer, is that we do a pitiful job of getting young people interested in basic manufacturing, what older guys like me would call simple machine shop jobs. And, you know, typically in the 1970s when I went to high school, if you were a B, C, D type student, then you took machine shop because you were going to end up in a machine shop. You weren't college material. But with today's world, with computerized manufacturing, CNC, lathes and mills, it's very simple for someone who's willing to put in a little bit of time to make a six-figure income in just a few years in manufacturing. So we need to get some young people, and not just young men and women, involved in getting into the manufacturing trades, and that would kick our economy up a few notches, I'm assuming.
Thanks very much for the call and the observation, Dave. Gene, I saw you nodding your head up and down while Dave was talking, so I'm going to give you the first crack at that one.
Well, I was just thinking, and thank you, Dave, but I was just thinking about, and you know, specifically about healthcare, but I agree with him that we need to reach these high school students earlier, and junior high, honestly, to help them build the thinking into what kind of careers that they want. And we know we need to do a better job of this on the healthcare side. We just we're reaching out, but we're not always grasping those students at the time that they could be entering college or even these vocational trades. I mean, we have those again, you know, they're non-degree programs, but they're very important jobs that impact the lives of people and help help our community. So I'm agreeing with him that we really need to reach out to our schools and build that better pipeline.
Rob, how much of this is, you know, we have seen in many ways the pace of change within the economy and the workplace escalate by almost exponential factors, so that we're now, you know, I mean, almost any institution is training people for jobs that may no longer exist.
Right. And that's a big question. What Dave was bringing up was in part, let me take a step back. The strength of the Indiana region and certainly Indianapolis is the diversity of the higher education institutions that exist here, coupled with the ability for them to connect with the corporations or the industries that are here. And rather than it being an either-or solution where you have to go the vocational route or the higher education route, we have the and route. Mm-hmm. And the job is to find out who really wants to be in what location as they go through that. And the strength, if you go all the way back to the creation of GPSE under, was it Luger or Hudnut, where the corporations were trying to find the solutions to the city's issues that existed, what you have here is kind of a regeneration of that thought in Jason's group, in Ascend, with willing players like Community and UIndy to try to figure out how to connect that pipeline, as you mentioned. The problem is that there's an immediate job in Gene's business, and there's a need for us to place our nurses in that job. But there's also a need for us to produce people who are relevant for 40 years, mm-hmm. not just for the first year that they're out. Lawyers have had this problem for years, and that they've gone through law school, and then you need to be trained on how to be a lawyer once you get into the firm. And so what we're finding is that if we
That's why a lot of lawyers actually say their legal education starts after law
after
school.
After law school.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is figure out in our education how to be a comprehensive liberal arts institution. So, again, we'll teach you how to think and read and write and be logical, but we also teach you how to interact with people, how to be a civil participant in society, and then how to follow a passion into a career. And with Ascend's help, really being the mediator, the kind of relationship developer, we're able to connect, and then we change curriculum and experiences based on what we hear from community, and they change expectations based on what they know we produce.
Jason, I want to bring it back to that question really about the pace of change here, the fact that things are evolving so rapidly that, you know, you think about now, everyone is excited about the prospect of driverless cars, you know, and vehicles, not thinking about the fact that that may put an entire industry, you know, suddenly we're not going to need truck drivers or bus drivers or cabs or even Uber drivers at some level, that, you know, a whole way of making a living is likely to disappear, not just within our lifetimes, but within the next decade.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. The demand for people with higher levels of education, as well as higher levels of education with technical expertise in an area, is increasing at a more rapid rate than it has at any point in human history. So when we look at the wage premiums that someone with a bachelor's degree makes over their high school educated counterparts, it's 83% higher, which is the highest point in American history anyway. But then when we look at the supply of people with that level of education, as I mentioned earlier, it's been relatively flat, which is what's driving up those wage premiums. At the same time, we're losing demand for those lower skill manufacturing roles, not necessarily those that Dave mentioned that were, you know, CNC machining that require more technical knowledge, but those jobs at Rexnord and at Carrier. But we see a steady supply of people with that level of education. And what that's creating in our society today is rampant income inequality. And to go back to, I think, a point that was alluded to earlier, you know, one of the things that is preventing people from going into higher education and getting the level of education that they are going to need to enter into the middle class is the fact that they see these $11 an hour jobs, $12 an hour jobs. They're taking those jobs and then delaying or in some instances not pursuing the education they need to enter into those middle class jobs or the level of liberal arts education they need to retrain in another field later on in their lives. And I think all of this is contributing to a very complex labor market where people feel like their ability to enter the middle class that existed in the 1950s through manufacturing as we knew it is decreasing.
Yeah, that the doors are getting smaller and smaller and the walls are getting higher and higher to scale. That is a big subject. We probably ought to mention the fact that it's difficult now, but it's likely to get a whole lot tougher. At least most economists that I'm aware of are projecting that there's going to be a massive labor shortage by the year 2030. And really, that comes down to a math problem. You think about it, everybody who's in the will be in the workforce in 2030 is alive now. So you just got to run the numbers on it. What are going to be the implications of that, Jason?
Well, I think, you know, I alluded to one of the most prevalent, but I think what you'll see is the baby boomers leaving the workforce. You'll see rising youth unemployment. You'll see growing income inequality. And then at any point in our history, whether you're looking at American history or world history, when you see that rising income inequality, the implications of that are social and political unrest. And I think we're seeing if not the manifestation of that, I think we're seeing the early manifestations of that now. And if we don't act – as a society to increase the educational attainment of those that are the millennials and the Gen Z and those that are coming up through the system today, you know, we're not going to be able to backfill and make sure that we, you know, are creating the opportunity that Americans have come to expect.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers. My guests are Jason Kloth, President and CEO, Ascend Indiana, Gene Putnam, Executive Vice President, Chief Nursing Office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, President of the University of Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers today on No Limits. My guests are Jason Kloth, President and CEO of Ascend Indiana, Gene Putnam, Executive Vice President, Chief Nursing Office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, President of the University of Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Catherine has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Catherine, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I was attending an apprenticeship and trades fair out in Hendricks County several months ago, and it was attended, the vendors there included employers as well as organizations, union and non-union, that engage in training people primarily for the trades. And although there is definitely a shortage of people in, who have the four-year degrees, there's also an incredible shortage, and it's only going to get worse in the trades. And to a person, every single person we talked to was talking about how difficult it is to find people who can work in the areas that have trade certification. And my takeaway from that was that the kink in the pipeline was happening at the school level. A lot of schools no longer have shop classes, for instance, and teach those things. A lot of the unions oftentimes don't have access to the schools like they used to in order to recruit people to come in and teach these kids. Hey, you may not, you know, a college degree may not be for you, but you can come in and work as a union apprentice and be paid and, you know, get really good training to make a really good job. And I think Indiana, unfortunately, has been subject to a pretty serious hardcore push to demonize unions, which is where a lot of the trade training has happened. And I think unless we address that, it's just going to make that aspect of the labor shortage even worse.
You must have been listening in, Catherine. We were talking about this very thing when we were at the break. So thanks very much for dragging the conversation right where I wanted it to go. I really appreciate you making the call. Thanks.
Thanks.
Sure.
Bye.
Thing. Yeah, so we were talking at the break about how, in many ways, the political discussions in this state, not just in this state, everywhere, are at least 30 years out of date that we're talking about, you know. I mean, there's still a very adversarial relationship between, you know, the business community and labor, when most of the evidence would suggest we need to move into a new model in which there is a great, much greater degree of collaboration. The efforts, some of the efforts that, that Catherine was alluding to in terms of wage suppression are going to be incredibly self-defeating. Jason, you're nodding your head, but I'm going to give everybody a bite at that because it is a big subject.
Well, you know, I won't get into the political dynamics, but what I will say, and I think there are few models where employers work so closely with the training providers as the nature of the relationship between unions and employers. So if you look at iron workers, pipe fitters, electricians, the employers are really laying out what it is the requirements are and the expectations of training. And then the unions are providing that level of degree and that sophistication in the training. So in some respects, there is a model that works very well, and it works very well in real time. So if there's new types of welding required to put up a windmill, then that is being communicated from the employer to the union, and they're making those adjustments to training. What I think is so exciting about the work that Ascend has been able to do alongside Community Health, as well as with the University of Indianapolis, with Roche, with Catalent and others, is employers are coming alongside, defining the requirements, the knowledge and skill that they need from their employees, working alongside the faculty in these higher education institutions, and really building a seamless pipeline that's to the benefit of not only the employer and the university, but to the job seeker, ultimately, that's going to create a seamless path into that job and into the middle class. And what we've also seen is incredible investment in the labor on the part of the employer. So communities investing nearly $500,000 in scholarships and work and learn experiences for these nursing candidates. So in some ways, I think we can look back to look forward, if you will, and think about how do we do this on a much more systematic level. And that's what we're trying to do at Ascend alongside employers in higher ed.
Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I wanted to actually bring up the relationship and the partnership with the University of Indianapolis that Ascend Indiana really chartered with us some time ago, a couple of years ago now, and really brought together three partners, not just the three of us, but the Strata, who helped provide some of the funding to get our Nursing Academy started. So the Nursing Academy is a unique and innovative program that we have partnered with UND on, with Ascend's help, to create a strategic pipeline and a strategic framework to get nurses into the system, because we have, as you mentioned, a huge shortage of nurses in Indiana and the nation, which is really only going to get worse here as our nurses retire and we don't have enough in the workforce. But really helping build those new talent pipelines, and it's been wildly successful in a lot of ways because they've really got us in that disruptive phase and innovative phase, which is sort of where the country is right now, too. And so we've had some great successes with our retention of nurses in this program because of the way that they get trained. So, you know, Ascend really pushed us to say, you know, let's elevate and differentiate how we are building that talent pipeline. So now what we do with the Nursing Academy is these are folks that we employ. And they they're sort of the best and the brightest that come through and want to seek a nursing career. So there's the accelerated three-year degree, and then our second degree. We're seeing a lot of our young people go back and get a second degree in nursing, which is wonderful because I think they want to have that impact. So that we're at 100% retention of those nurses in the program after 3 years, which is at least 25% better than anybody else I know and what's published in the country. So we're very excited about that. And we attribute a lot of that to this partnership that Ascend Indiana started. And now it's just continued to grow with UND and Community Health Network. I mean, there's just lots and lots of different things that have come out of this.
Rob, you'd mentioned earlier that there was pressure to sort of commodify education. And we see that. But it's created some pushback, obviously. And, you know, from the college level, we focus most of it on higher ed. As you know, within our world, there's tremendous concern about how ready many of the students who arrive at college are for college level work. And if it is going to be, I'll toss it out there. The argument is being advanced, too, that if, you know, the purpose of education is really to do job training, then the businesses ought to be picking up more of the cost of doing that and not shifting as much of it to the taxpayers. That's going to involve some fairly radical shifts in the education world, if that's the case. And that's the minefield we have to negotiate.
So I struggle with this on a daily basis. The expectation is that the students show up kind of in sports coats, ready to go and take their place in the commercial world, and that they've got
maybe a 1950s sitcom,
passion of a tiger, and they're, you know, they're working to go through.
Yeah.
But when I study this, what I realize is there are regions in the U.S. that combine the corporate world and the educational world, where regional economic advantages created, like the 128 corridor in Boston or Raleigh-Durham area. And it's not so much thought of as a either or a zero sum game. It's thought of as this cooperation model where you allow the higher education institutions to do what they do best, educate and train, and the institutional effect that both of our institutions have on students recognize that they come to us with variable academic skill sets, and the faculty are particularly good at bringing them to a level where they could enter the workforce. That's why we're still in business. That's why people still come. That's part of the value. Connecting the pipeline to a career after or during the process of them forming to become, where they understand that they have a role and responsibility to the civic society they're going to engage, is the beauty of this kind of a relationship. So our nurses are not just coming in, putting on the white coat, standing in line, and then moving through to become a nurse. They're also learning about human interaction and their own moral compasses and how to defend and engage and understand their skill sets and then how those benefit others. That's the value you have when you come to UIndy. And that becomes, through the connection and the pipeline here, becomes a real trait that matches the values of community hospital. And so while they're passing the NCLEX, the state licensure at 100%, and they're moving into these career jobs, they're ready to become part of the citizenry and the kind of morale of the company that they move into. And that's a value that when you have that connection, the region survives, region becomes more competitive than just the student. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a motion being made through Ascend to redesign the purpose of education, but not by commodifying what we do, by taking what we do and saying that's a value in the creation of employers who aren't just working at community. They're also shopping at your local stores and they're going to your events. And if you make them ready to take that stage at a place where they're adding to the quality of life of all, you get a much better society. And that's what those other regions I mentioned are doing particularly well. And I think we're doing now with Ascend and Community and Roche and some other companies.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named John has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. John, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking the call, guys. I just, I'd like to mention a few things. As Jason said earlier, it's a complex issue, so obviously there's a lot of different variables coming at it. But as an IUPUI student and soon-to-be graduate, one of the big things I see with Indiana is, first and foremost, not taking enough opportunities for internships. I think that's a big thing that we have that we could utilize. I mean, we have a ton of able bodies on campus that would love to get that experience. As well as, I think some of my cohorts at school would have you believe that a lot of the job openings require 5 years experience or more and don't have the best benefits package in terms of, if I can get a higher paying job adjusted with, for cost of living with better benefits, why would I stay in Indiana? So I think maybe that's part of the problem with, brain drain is not really providing great options for, outcoming graduates.
Thanks very much for the call and the observations, John. I think I'll start with Jason on that one.
Yeah, so thank you so much, John, and I want to encourage you to go to ascendindiana.com because we'd love to meet with you. But that's one of the solutions that we're pursuing is to address a lot of the issues that were just raised. So we've built a software platform called the Ascend Network, and what we do is profile on that network companies, jobs, internships, so that those become visible to that student at IUPUI. And so far in our first 8 months of operation, we've added 92 employers to that network with plans to grow to hundreds in the coming months and thousands in the coming years, hopefully. And then we partner with universities like IUPUI, the University of Indianapolis, as well as the community college system, Ivy Tech, We reach out to students in partnership with the career service offices, meet with them, help them to build out a profile, and then connect them to the internships and jobs that are out there, so that there's visibility into the labor market, which really hasn't existed in the way that we would like to see it exist. And I think, you know, this is one of the core challenges in front of us and what we're so excited about. So thus far, we have 16,000 candidates coming out of 14 colleges, including Franklin. We've met with nearly 2,000 students and built about 1,000 profiles and connected 428 individuals to opportunities. So we've seen tremendous progress in the pilot and are excited to scale it on behalf of students and job seekers across the state.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Lisa, and if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Lisa writes, "All need a chance to develop thinking, writing, and speaking skills alongside an understanding of history and culture. Beyond this, it is important to hold vocational training and classic academic training as different viable choices and make them financially feasible." Rob, you're nodding your head here.
Yeah, so the regional advantage for us is that we have all of those possibilities in a very tight geographic district. The question is, how do you put and allow the people access to the kind of education that they're most suited for or most desiring of? And that, whether those are limited by certain policies or structures or cost, if that's the case, then our policies have to catch up and our costs have to be kind of identified differently. Or if it's because they don't see the aspiration coming through that educational opportunity is a problem. But back to the previous caller's conversation too, people want to live in Indiana because the quality of life here is just terrific. I'm a transplant from the East Coast with three kids, and I would choose to live here even if I weren't as the president of the University of Indianapolis. We have about 70% of our students from Indiana, but 86% of our alumni live here. So they're choosing to be here. The relationships that we're creating, to the last two caller and tweeter's points, isn't just about the aspiration and the talent or the skill set to get there, but it's about the social capital required to be able to function in a network. So the internship that the caller mentioned is important from IUPUI is important. But equally as important is the network you develop to both generate those aspirations and then the ability to call in that network to get the position or the job that you're hoping to be. But if you show up at that door and you're not qualified, not just technically or content-wise, but also from a personal characteristic standpoint, you'll end up, you know, getting out of the position before you want to, or terminated in some ways because you can't perform in the human context in which all these jobs require. They're great points, but specifically Indiana has this great opportunity to combine the profession with the school, with companies and programs like Ascend to be able to make those connections really intentional and to drive up the reason why people would want to stay here and live here and the access to opportunities as they go through.
This is a big subject. We'll probably have to, we're coming up on a break, but we'll have to pick. But we keep coming back to the educational piece of this. And I know from doing shows on you know, with former employees from Carrier or whomever who've had to make adjustments, and they get almost enraged when, you know, they hear someone say, "Oh, you need to scale up." And they're thinking, "Okay, I lost this job. I'm now working 50, 60 hours a week at several jobs and not making what I was at those 11 and 12 per hour jobs. You know, how do I do that? Where do I find the time to go get that training?" I've tossed that out there. That's what we're going to pick up when we come back on the other side of the break. We are talking about connecting Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers. My guests are Jason Kloth, President and CEO of Ascend Indiana, Gene Putnam, Executive Vice President, Chief Nursing Office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, President of the University of Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers today on No Limits. My guests are Jason Kloth, president and CEO of Ascend Indiana, Gene Putnam, executive vice president, chief nursing office, Community Health Network, and Rob Manuel, president of the University of Indianapolis. So before we went to the break, I tossed out a big question here, which is, I've picked on, I think, Jason before the first question, Gene the last time, so I'm going to go with Rob on this one. A lot of this, the folks who most need and are sort of being pushed out of this emerging workforce, or at least pushed out of the sweeter spots in this emerging workforce, are the ones who find that, you know, that the barriers to entry are almost impossible because they're trapped in a cycle where just to keep health, family, life together, they're already working, you know, insane amounts and being told, I got to figure out a way to go get some schooling here to pick up new skills so I can get out of this, rat race is to them very difficult to hear. How do we break that cycle?
And that's exactly where higher education needs to become a more active partner in the problem. So most of my career was spent in adult education at NYU and then at Georgetown before I came out here. And we were serving the population that you just described and being creative and flexible with the things that didn't commodify us and strict on the things that we knew they needed to experience in order to be productive members of the workforce when they got out. And I think in our economic area, higher education isn't broken. It just needs to be redesigned a little bit. And so the question for me is, how do you create the educational experiences that meet the time demands of the population we're talking about, but still require the formation and the soft skill development that we were talking about during the break to get you into these positions? Because as Jason said during the break, you need to be both technically proficient and proficient in kind of the human skills, the softer skills, in order to succeed. And that's true whether you are 18 or 45. But the system right now, most of higher education right now, is structured for the 18-year-old. It just needs to be restructured so that more can access it.
Jason.
Yeah, so I think I can maybe address your question really concretely through the example of what we've done alongside community in the University of Indianapolis. So let's say there's a worker from, you know, a factory that's been closed down. And let's say, so Daisy's lost her job and she's interested in going into, she wants a middle class life and she's interested in potentially healthcare. She could enroll in the nursing academy that was created with the University of Indianapolis and Community Health. She would get her bachelor's of science in nursing paid for by Community Health while being a part-time employee so that there'd still be some income coming in while getting that education. The University of Indianapolis will confer the degree, but they can reduce the cost of that somewhat because the students are being taught on-site at Community Health by faculty like Beth Sims, who's got her doctorate in nursing and is an adjunct faculty at Community. Daisy does all of her clinical rotations at Community Health. The mandatory 10-week orientation is integrated into the educational training at Community Health. And then Daisy transitions directly into that middle-class job. So the net effect is she comes out into the middle class with employment and education and a degree. The University of Indianapolis gets a new stream of revenue that supports its growth and its work, and Community is proactively increasing time to productivity, improving retention and employee satisfaction, and everyone's winning. And Ascend's role in that is really, we're kind of the conductor in a symphony, if you will, bringing all the parties together and figuring out how can we build that out so it's seamless for Daisy.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the efforts to connect Indiana businesses with the right kinds of workers today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Tyler has done and send us a tweet at WFYI. What role does or should K-12 education play in addressing our workforce challenges? We'll start with Jean on that one.
Well, as we talked a little earlier about, we really have to engage our youth in what are the different careers. And so I'm focused in the not-for-profit sector and healthcare specifically. And there's, you know, it's one of the largest growing fields. I mean, the RN workforce in itself is the largest healthcare workforce that there is in healthcare, RNs. I mean, there's about 4 million in the country.
And healthcare is 20% of the U.S. economy.
There you go, right? So yeah. We, you know, we've got a lot of channels there. But you know, I think this, you know, John mentioned this in the internships. I mean, I think we have to get back to these internships, even in younger ages. And, you know, we've got all kinds of laws and things like HIPAA that, you know, our privacy acts that, you know, we think in business that, oh, well, we can't have younger people in there, but we really can. And we've been able to successfully do that with a couple of our school corporations, Cecina being one of those, Lawrence Township Schools, another one, where we actually do have these high school students engaging in more cooperative kinds of workforce. The McKenzie Center, you know, trying to grab those high school students who want to go into some kind of healthcare field, and then we'll, you know, they'll like want to become a certified nursing assistant. So they're doing that while they're in high school, but then they can come over and practice those skills and in community health network with direct supervision. So I mean, it's something that's I think it continues to grow, and we need to continue to address.
Jason, you look like you wanted to say something on that subject, too.
Sure. Well, I could, you know, given my prior life, I could go into this at length. I think there are a number of things that need to occur to bring it full circle. The reality is that too few students graduate from our K-12 system, so we need to continue to make changes that include preschool, particularly preschool for students from low-income background. Increase the quality of our K-12 system, and then ensure that those students that graduate are enrolling in the 21st Century Scholars Program, that they're completing the FAFSA forms, that they're aware of all the various higher education opportunities, whether that's at Ivy Tech or Franklin, UIndy, or IUPUI, and then really doing everything we can to make that awareness and the need to get that additional education clear to students. At the same time, we need to look at career and technical education in our community. As one of the earlier callers mentioned, what types of certificates are we offering at the K-12 level, and are those certificates of value to those students that aren't going to go on and pursue post-secondary education? Because as the gentleman mentioned, There are opportunities out there where people can still enter into the middle class if they get the proper certification and training. So I think the K-12 system plays, or the pre-K-12 system, if you will, plays a critical role.
Well, and as an observation, I will say here, we've alluded to the fact that, that some of the forces that are being created by this shortage account for the disruption in our political process and the increasing ferocity of a lot of our public discussions. With all due respect to what we've been talking, this in many ways sounds like a pretty massive workaround here. That we're trying to figure out a way to solve problems around the mechanism that is supposed to be our way of resolving problems in this country. Can we do this without having the state and federal governments really come to understand the nature of this problem and engage in ways that go beyond finger pointing and name calling? Rob?
Yes, and here's why I think that. There are generous state policies in place to help students pay for higher education, more generous than any other state I've ever worked in. The problem, though, is in the activity is not just connecting the pieces of the pipeline as they exist. the opportunity exists to bend the pieces of the pipeline to connect a new pathway for these people to work through. And we work directly with the population that gets the job and have the opportunity to really affect the mainstream and flow of the people who are the workforce. I'll give you an example. We redesigned our career services center about 3 or 4 years ago with the help of a grant from the Lilly Endowment to make it a social capital generator, which engaged the educational curricular components and the co-curricular components to prepare students differently based on what we were hearing the corporations wanted, the industries wanted. That pipeline now connects in different ways and produces a different path to employment in a way that directly begins to affect students' activities post-graduation, because what they're learning is the technical skill and also the ability of to know what good citizenry is, civil action is. And I think there are just great examples of that in Indiana, not too far in our distant future, that we can tap to be able to showcase as being relevant, how you become relevant in contemporary times and how you fix that problem of veracity on each side, not talking with each other, but just talking at each other.
Jason.
Yeah, I think we're at a real inflection point. And to your question about government's role, I think government has to play a role. And we've gone through this at various points in American history. As the economy has changed, as the demand side of the labor market has changed, we've changed our policies to increase the supply of individuals with the education they need to meet that demand. And so when I look at the role of government, I think things like the city's investment in preschool, expanding the state's investment in preschool so that more low-income students are starting, on par with their more affluent peers, is a critical way in which state government and city government can play a role. I think Mayor Hogsett's leadership on India Achieves that would make community college, IUPUI, tuition-free for low-income students, encouraging them to study in high-demand fields, encouraging the K-12 system to ensure students enroll in the 21st Century Scholar and FAFSA, is the mayor recognizing that type of need. And so I do believe that there is a role for city and state government and public policy makers to play, and I think we're starting to see that in Indiana. And I know that for what it's worth on our end, we want to do everything we can to encourage them to do so.
Gene, I'll reframe it ever so slightly, because in some ways in your field, it's even worse. I mean, I hear a lot of people who work in healthcare saying the thing we would like most right now is for someone not to change the rules every 20 seconds.
Yeah.
So that we know exactly what we're supposed to do rather than the goalposts constantly shifting.
It's incredibly complex. I was thinking about that when you were talking about the FAFSA forms, Jason. I was thinking, I have a doctorate, and I will tell you that the FAFSA forms still are challenging.
We make things
complex for people, and sometimes overly complex, in my opinion. But, and healthcare is no exception to that. And, there's a lot of processes and interchangeable kinds of things, or interoperable or not, that are occurring in my own world. So I do understand that we need to continue to simplify. The government's role in healthcare has been pretty strong in the last probably 8 years or so. And so what is the role of government in healthcare and the rising healthcare cost and pharma and all those things that we could get into on another show, I'm sure. It's incredibly complex, and we need to continue to try to change that.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Andy. And again, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Andy writes, "Why is the impetus placed on education and training when it absolutely belongs on wage suppression and skimpy benefits? My sons are taking their training out of state, and in the case of my oldest, out of country, Canada, because Indiana jobs just don't pay." We've seen this, and we've done shows about this, too. Even though we're pretty close to full employment, we've seen poverty rates in this state climb. If you use the ALICE designation, I can't remember all of the letters of that designation, nearly half of the population here in central Indiana is really, tiptoeing along what amounts to a financial precipice. We haven't seen traditionally full employment means that poverty declines and wages rise and everything is good. We're seeing something new right now. Jason?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we're seeing this bifurcation of the labor market. And a lot of it has to do with both the demand and the supply side. So one of the things I think we should look at is what kind of jobs are we creating in our state, and what's the role of incentives to attract good paying jobs for individuals to be able to take. So in my view, we want to be very attractive to companies like Salesforce and Amazon and others that are going to have disproportionately high wages and want to encourage that. At the same time, as a state, as I alluded to, part of this is supply side. We've got to make sure that we have the people with the education required to be able to fill those better paying jobs. And, you know, currently we don't have a sufficient supply. So I think it is a very multifaceted challenge that we face. And, you know, there's a lot that we need to be doing on both ends to improve it.
Rob, you kind of furrowed your brow when he said we don't have enough. What were you thinking?
That was more about my lunch than about what Jason was saying. the thought I had was, you asked a question about where does policy fit. Well, yeah. This is right where policy fits. How do you attract to get the jobs? You've got higher education in companies and places like Ascend willing to do the gymnastics to fit and bend and be. Now we've got to bring in the competition and the employee to be able to have the jobs for people to fit into. I think we have production at our levels, at the mm-hmm. college levels, pretty well established. But we can't be everything to the marketplace. We really mm-hmm. are good at what we do in our space. And so the diversity of the kind of educational offerings we have could be bolstered through policy as well. The kind of jobs that we bring in and the kind of employers we bring in could be bolstered by policy. And then the existing people around the table, the larger community table, can be effective in bending our pipeline to make sure they connect in right ways. And that's where Ascend comes in very specific ways for the reality that's here. I think we're competitive as a region for attracting positions. The whole talk about Amazon and other people coming here is because we have that kind of groups in the society that can work together.
I want to give Gene actually a chance to deliver the last word here. Sadly, okay. You've only got about 20 seconds
okay.
to do it.
So we've been talking about people who are entering the workforce, our young mm-hmm. people, but we actually need to be talking about our retired folks and how they could use, we could utilize them in our workforce shortages as well. We're using something called a nurse laureate program. So, you know, experienced people can come back and be mentors. So
I think we could very easily do at least another hour on this subject.
Yes.
we'll have you back sometime and do just that. I'd like to thank my guests, Jason Cloth, Gene Putnam, and Rob Manuel, for what has been a lively conversation about Indiana's labor and business challenges. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.